bare left there when you get to that 4.
Yeah. And that's 475.
Mm-hmm. And then 475 is just from there to there to get back on 75.
I've got a long table.
In Knoxville, are you going right to what? The Big Hurley House?
Yeah.
They've got these beltways now and loops that they've just started.
Beltway in Knoxville?
Mm-hmm. A nice beltway goes all the way around Knoxville now. Really, they've got it. They're really fixing it up. I'm trying to think of the quickest way you can get to there.
From the interstate. 75.
Mm-hmm. Probably the best way is to get off at either Walker Springs or Bearden and get on to Kingston.
Yeah.
Instead of going all the way into town, then you have to turn around and come back out.
We'll get off at Bearden.
Get off at Bearden and go over to Kingston Pike.
Because, I've always just gone in from Maryville.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if you get off at Bearden, that puts you on North Shore. You know, North Shore Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Which cuts lines you there.
Mm-hmm. That's where Nana lives.
Right. And Bearden put you on to North Shore Drive. You can go right up North Shore Drive till you get to line two.
Mm-hmm. And then go on
that. Yeah, and then you can go either way. You can go right to the Little Hurleys or left to the Big Hurleys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Barbara's. This is going to be really good, man, because he's in out of town. If he could come, they'd go in a couple of days, really. And he'll pay this.
Well,
you'll see that.
It's a definite possibility.
It's a place in Kentucky, and it's a place in West Virginia.
And
then West Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants
in
a
West
picture.
Tennessee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, around Memphis?
Yeah, not far.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I need to go to Memphis too. There's some business.
Oh, really?
To attend to for the club in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bible wants to see you, and she's over at Wade, and that's San Nicanope. And it's next to, not far from the museum on Main Street.
Hey, nobody's listening to you. You don't have to whisper.
And, I'm not whispering, and I was just saying where Wade's was. And it's this front with a red door to it. Can't miss it. You know where Buster Mountain had his garage?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's next door to that. It's a red door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only red door on Main Street. And you just.
I didn't realize there was a dark room for making.
And you just go. Well, it's Wade. He's a professional photographer.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I thought you'd go in.
Mm-hmm.
She's there with a car.
Does she have color?
No, she doesn't.
It's black and
white.
Well, so y'all are fixing to push off, huh?
Well, I don't know. He's got a few things to do,
mm-hmm.
but I pack up a little bit.
Well,
And I guess I'll
you're
going
to take it a couple of days to make the trip?
Yeah. I need. See, the thing about Molly is I need to have her. I need to have something to ride.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care that I have a fine horse or not.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I'll be there, I'm sure, when you get back. We'll look around.
Okay.
Because
you
need her. You need
her.
I mean, if you're going to have her, you need her.
Mm-hmm.
If we could find something that you know, I could sort of enjoy and the children could ride.
There are a lot
see,
of
I just got one. I just got two. Just got a little center on mine,
mm-hmm.
and I just have to have two on mine.
Mm-hmm.
Now Barbara's got the thoroughbred Barney and this little horse out here.
Mm-hmm. And who are the two
teaching.
Up here?
Well, that's Crooked.
Oh. Well.
See, she has to have some for teaching.
Mm-hmm. There's several around. There's one. I'm thinking of it as a schooling horse they're using now for lessons and all. Nothing special, just a plain old horse, but he's gentle and just goes along, does whatever you tell him, and that's what they use him for in school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do his right lead every time, no prodding.
Because personally, you know, as you know, I love to have something with a little walking horse.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one tastes like it's like a walking. Mm-hmm. So they say he doesn't have papers or anything, but the owners claim that he's got walking horse blood in him. But I don't know. He does have that gait though.
What do you coast along at on the road? 55.
About 55, yeah.
And it takes about 12, 14 hours.
Mm-hmm.
See, kind of how you want it. Both of our eyes are sort of white, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to take his typewriter, he wants to take a paper for it. And I was hoping that he'd wait till after Christmas to come up.
Well,
because, come up right after Christmas and fly.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just didn't want him to get worn out before Faye got there.
When did she arrive?
She's getting there Christmas Day.
Uh-huh.
But he just wants to go now. So I canceled my lessons this week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going up there. But I know he'll be wanting. I wish he was going to be there. I know he's going to be just begging the leash to get a few of these places.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any deadline to come back by? You have to be back by any time?
No.
Well, spend some time then. Spend a few weeks out in January. Stick around.
I think if he's got something going, and especially if he can.
Because the more time you're there, the better I can arrange time. It's hard to arrange time off just in the spare of the moment, but the more leeway you have to play with, the more I can arrange.
Yeah. All right.
But, that'd be fun.
Now that you have all these cameras.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got something I need to show you in the car. In fact, I need to hear it. In Gainesville, because I'm going there. And he told me, he said, well, the front is between Gainesville and Tallahassee. It's moving slowly. By this afternoon, should hit some sun. It'll be cloudy, though, in the morning.
Now, that's a friend where it's at.
He just looked at the radar on his desk there, or wherever he has it, and told me this is exactly what it was. He was exactly right, too. Couldn't believe it. I always hesitate paying attention to the weather, man. They're always wrong.
Well, they know where fronts are.
Yeah, they can tell you where things are, what it's doing at the moment.
Now, they can't tell you whether it'll get there or not.
Right.
Or you may get a low pressure to come up from the flank.
Yeah. The ones in Knoxville are horrible. They're never right. Never right. Those ones, I watch it on TV and they say, well, look for snow tomorrow, and there's no snow tomorrow. Or else you get the snow today. Or something. They're always off by a day, one way or another. I always figure whatever they say, well, it'll be the next day, or it'll be a day sooner. Whatever they say. I've never seen they're so bad. Never seen one right.
I forget about Knoxville. I remember it was a tricky area to.
Well, it is tricky, really, because you got the mountains right on the side there, and things tend to stop or go on the mountains there. A front comes in and just gets stalled on the side of the mountain there. Knoxville stuck with it till something decided to happen. Won't go on through.
Is Tex the only man out of your peer group that you see?
Well, he's the only one that's worth it.
Well, what I mean is it's so unusual to get out, you know.
Well, I don't do much getting out there. I'm kind of tired. The reason I see him is because he comes in, you know. He tends to come. We got two vets that come in. I see them regularly.
Oh,
they've
been to school.
Yeah, they've been to school. But it's even though they're that way, it's the difference between them that's interesting. One of the vets, they're partners, and they both drive the same truck. So when you call, you never know which one's going to come. There's a young guy that's just out of college, he's my age, and then his partner is about 60 years old, an entirely different entirely different. Whenever you have a horse problem, each one of them handles it entirely different depending on which one comes. You can always tell. Sometimes I've had horses that were cut or lame or something in exactly the same way, and whichever one comes, he does just the opposite of the other one. I don't know whether they know it or what, but one will come. In fact, sometimes they'll come back for a repeat on the same horse. You know, he'll have a bad cut or be lame or something, and they'll come and tell you such and such to do, and he'll come back in a couple of days to check up. Sometimes the other one will come back the next time and tell you something to do different than you've been doing all along. Well, that's true.
You haven't told us anything.
He wants to tell what he had.
Yeah, well, I can talk like that. Well, I suppose you get cut. What does he do?
He wants to know what.
Well, let me see if I can think of the last time that happened.
What happened to old Bonnie? He got into it, yeah.
He was romping over a post, I think. Not having seen it, I wouldn't know. But came in with.
You didn't see what he got over, went over.
No, I thought he got cut up with barbed wire. And then when Faye and I went and looked at it again after I quit fuming and came down off the ceiling, why it was scraped and not cut.
Oh.
But he had him all along his chest and back up under one leg and right on down, all down the leg to the knee.
From barbed wire?
No, it wasn't barbed wire. It wasn't cut.
But you.
It looked like it was cut. You know, when I first saw it, I saw this, all this. What looked like cuts and blood.
Mm-hmm. Scrapes?
Yeah, it was scrapes.
Tree, maybe. Yeah.
Tree or limb or something.
You're running through the field in the middle of the night and scraped upside.
Yeah.
And what?
Scraped upside a tree. Ran along, didn't hit it head on, but hit sideswiped a tree, maybe. As you're running along.
Can do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was in a strange pasture.
Especially. Mm-hmm. They'll get afraid at night. They're just wild at night. We had them the other day. We brought in a new horse. They weren't in a strange pasture, but we put in a new horse with 20 of the other ones that were there. And they got to running him down, up and down the field in the middle of the night, running into trees and barbed wire, and they don't even know where they're going. They just keep running all night long. Dum 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 thunder, one into the field and the other, up and down. Back and forth. They get quiet and they're all good. They're going to go to sleep now. Here they come, thundering back up to the other side. Hear them. It sounds like thunder. Nothing you can do.
They don't
have that many.
Time up.
In the middle of the night? Time up to what?
Well,
time together.
Well, what I did was, the next day, I just got this strange one out, separated him from the rest. It was a familiar pattern.
What, can infect them?
Yeah.
So can a cow. Yeah. You know the way a cow does. You have a whole bunch of cows out there, and you're working them.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one mean cow that don't want to do it, and she'll dive into them and get them all.
Yeah.
She'll dive into them.
Yeah.
Plow
through
them.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
and
right.
Nick,
you know how
and they'll all take the alarm. They'll follow her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, horses are pretty much the same way. Especially when you get a strange one that they've never seen before. They've never smelled before. They've never seen them before. They're brand new on a place. And bring them right in, and every horse in the whole herd's got to come up, smell them, see who they are, fight with them a bit.
And turn around
and kick them, and then he takes off running. They all go after him. Up and down. The other one tries to get away, and they all got to catch him. Trail pain.
Cookie would like to have a place here where he can just bring odds and ends, and I won't let him, you see, because the fences are bad, and then it's right next door to the other horses.
Mm-hmm.
You bring any sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, how could you do that?
Be tough.
What could you do where he could do that? You'd have to have them clear on the other side of the pasture, wouldn't you?
Well, to keep the other ones from knowing it, you would. You'd have to have them out of sight, for one thing. You have to have them out of smell range too. They can know. They'll know if they're there, whether they can see them or not.
Well, what I was thinking about, close enough to catch each other's germs.
Well, it's hard to say how germs go. If one horse has got something, they'll all get it if they're around. But it's hard to say what the distance is that would be safe. Most of ours up there, we have 30, have gotten colds so far this winter. They always do once every winter. But I tried to see if I could stop it this time when one got it and get him out of there, away from all the rest, so that the other ones don't catch it. Well, that's usually how one gets it that's weak and gives it to all the rest. And I separated them. I put the herd in one pasture and left the pasture in between and put them in the other one. And the pasture in between is a 15-acre pasture of distance in between. Put the other one all the way on the other side. You still got it. I don't know whether he'd already infected them or the wind. Yeah, it's hard to say. Really hard to say.
More than likely, he's already infected them by the time the symptoms show. Because
mm-hmm.
I used to be able to tell when one was coming down. We kept them all stalled.
Mm-hmm.
I had to turn them out for half an hour down.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through a spell of cold. And it got to the point where I could tell the next one that was coming
mm-hmm.
down before anybody else could.
Mm-hmm.
Even before they stopped drinking water, which is usually the very first thing. I could tell because I'd be leading him up the pasture and he'd just this slight little sound in his throat, and it was so faint that
mm-hmm.
you know, nobody just walking up and down the stall row would have noticed it. And heck, that would be 2 or 3 days before the horse
mm-hmm.
would show symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I had a hard time convincing Mr. Walter that I said, this horse is going to be sick. And he'd say, we don't need to hump off, and he wouldn't
mm-hmm.
do a thing about it. And 3 days later, the horse would be sick.
When do they stop drinking?
About, just before they start showing a runny nose and coughing. As soon as the fever goes up.
I tell on mine from riding. I can tell the way they act a couple or 3 days before they get it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a little bit less, could care less attitude. They're a little bit more droopy. When you ride them, they're less, a little bit less, well, if you know the horse.
Yeah.
You know what he's normally like. He's just a little bit less perky.
Uh-huh.
And then you can tell he's going to get one in a couple of 3 days. And I always stick them right then with some penicillin. I do half the vet stuff myself now. I've learned so much from the vets that watching them do it, and I just do it all myself now, pretty much. I give them penicillin streptomycin for colds, and if I can tell one coming on, I give him 20 cc's of it, and either he won't get it then, or if he does, he just has it for about a day. That way,
all right.
It's been working real good, yeah. He'll just have it for a day, have a real light case of it. If you can catch him early. If you miss one and he already catch him with the runny nose and the rest, I still give him a shot. But then I use azithromycin, which has got a higher level of antibiotics in it. And that will cut down the length of the cold. But if you miss it, you're still going to get a bad one. So
you can't just give the whole field.
Well, I thought of that. I thought, aha, well, what I'll do is I'll just shoot every one of them long before any of them gets it. Trick is, penicillin passes through their system within 24 hours. If they don't have penicillin in them when they're getting it, then it doesn't do any good. It won't stay in them. So you give him a shot, and if he's not in the process of getting a cold, then tomorrow he can still get a cold. So one shot won't give him immunity, in other words, from it, unless he's actually in the process of a cold at the time. I thought of that. I thought I was going to be real sneaky and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can get longer acting antibiotics, but the longer acting ones you get are more specialized. You can't get a general antibiotic that's long acting. In other words, you can get a 7-day antibiotic one, but it's for a particular virus. And if that's the one the horse happens to be going to be getting, then then you stopped it. But he could get any number of 30 other kinds and still get a cold. And it'd be the same, it'd be a different
and
one.
And they haven't developed a cold shot for a horse yet.
No. I had thought about, they have the same sort of deal of a flu shot for a horse, like they do for people. And flu shots tend to help people keep get from getting colds. And I asked him about that. I said, well, does that do the same for horses? And he said, no.
No.
Sorry.
2 weeks after the flu shot, the first horse came down.
Yeah, doesn't do it. Won't do it.
I believe that they said in swamp fever, you had to have, what is it, 300 feet? Would that be right, or 300 yards?
300 yards.
To keep another one from getting it.
Yeah, they've had experiments in Texas with birds that were separated by that much without any.
Yeah. But 300 yards is a pretty good distance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you'd be
quarter of a mile almost.
I believe horses were more sensitive than cows.
Yeah, well, it depends on the horse.
And
you know, your
horses
you're,
are exposed more than cows. See, cows stay in the back pasture.
Yeah.
They don't have so many human associations.
Your purebred horses will catch things a lot faster. Lots faster. They get everything in the book. Your purebred horses, but your grade, your Heinz 57 varieties, your Newpies, your old plugs don't get anything. They never get anything wrong with them for some reason. I don't know why that is. I think it's probably genetic. They've bred out all the immunities, the natural immunities from the horses. And your old plugs are. They've built up age-long immunities and don't get as much. We have horses there that are just old, great horses that nobody even knows where they came from. They don't get colds. They don't get anything. They don't even get barbed wire scratches. And then your nice $10,000, you know, saddlebred comes up with everything in the book and costs you another $10,000 in vet bill. It always seems to happen.
Now, you got horses donated to you.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we're expecting, that's one of the reasons why I have to go to Memphis. We're getting $20,000 worth of horses from Memphis. That these people are donating two thoroughbreds, one valued at $15,000, one valued at $5,000, donating to us. And one of them is fresh off the circuit here in Florida. Names is Toots Queen, thoroughbred and registered and all that, and really hot on the circuit, really winning everything in sight. Things 6 or 8 years old, and they're going to retire it and give them to us. And the other one's the same, only hadn't been as hot quite for winning.
And then they can take it off of the income tax. And then
they can make a tax write-off, yeah. Nice, big one, too.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gotten quite a few horses like that, even old grade horses.
Yeah.
People have an old horse, and they just say, we don't want it anymore, y'all want it, and they value them at $200 and write it off. Because it's UT, you know, it's non-profit.
You
have
a right of refusal on a horse?
Yeah. We can say, yeah, you can give him to us, but we don't want him, sorry. We can not take it if we don't want. We've not done that. Since I've been there, I don't think we've ever refused one. Usually what we'll do is, three came last summer. Some guy from Oklahoma donated us three of the worst looking creatures you've ever seen. They were horrible. And we sold them. We just took them. Well, that's what we'll do. Instead of refusing, we'll just take them and sell them.
Collect
a, $75 or whatever.
We used to get caught in the worst messes that hurt us. It wasn't my problem, fortunately, because I would have had loud words to say. They would, people would, old alumni would donate horses, and they would donate halt and lame and blind. And, and with the stipulation that Meredith couldn't sell them.
Oh, my God.
And Meredith would take them. It was just unreal.
Fortunately, we haven't got any like that, any of those stipulations.
I think our stable manager used to quietly slip them off on the side to his buddy. Well, he did that with one mare, and I was so furious. She was named $10,000, thoroughbred mare. Had shown one season on the Virginia circuit, and really had some promise. Young, only 6 years old. Sold her for $350 to the blacksmith.
Well, it happens. But we've not had any.
Well,
that
what use would the blacksmith have for
her? He took her down to Southern Pines and probably got $8,000 for her from somebody down there who probably took her up north, and she probably lives in New York now. You know?
He just resold her.
Yeah, sure. What he did was to give his friend the blacksmith for $700 of profit. Just like handing him the check.
Sure doesn't sound as if he could be.
What happens to the alumni when he comes back and says, "Where's my horse? You're supposed to be keeping."
Well, that particular alumni didn't make that stipulation.
Oh well, in that case.
You know,
mm-hmm.
What the one that got stipulated that way were the 12-head ponies that couldn't even walk for being founders.
Well, those three that came to us were like that. One had stifle so bad, could hardly walk, couldn't load her in the trailer, had to pick her up and put her in the trailer. And one was real lame from bowed tendon, and the other one, there's nothing wrong with her, she was just stupid. Just an idiot. Just couldn't even walk in the barn door without tripping over something, or just really dumb. Never seen the dumbest horse I've ever seen.
She probably got real sick and had brain damage.
But we sold all of them. Sold all of them for $300. Sometimes we sell them for dog meat. Or horse, you know, horse meat. You can get the old 10, 20 cents a pound for them. You can make 100 and a quarter, 150 off a horse if he's a good size.
I see it. This is all knowledge.
Yeah.
They've had experience. They know my horses. But the talk itself is not up to cookie.
That's right.
I took a trip to a cookie. And, you talk about living up to what he knows. He got a dog. He got a dog down here. They didn't want it up there. It was their home. He had that one dog, and he put it in an empty trailer. His trailer was empty. He came home back, didn't have anything in. And, you know, I don't think he would even give that dog water. It took him 2 or 3 days to get out.
Did it live?
Well, if other people gave her water. And Aunt Cookie didn't give her a thing, and didn't even speak to her, and didn't even let her out.
Really?
And she was a beautiful little.
What do you see there now? Cookie may talk, but he doesn't treat his animals right.
No.
We do.
Well,
that's Nick's thesis.
Now, yeah, his thesis.
Remember that Thanksgiving you came back with that thesis thing?
Yeah.
He made it.
And he takes horses all the way to Pennsylvania, and he never gives them a drink or lets them walk around.
It's all rough on them. Awful rough.
He just goes nonstop, you see.
as he get through the checkpoints, those agricultural things, you have to pull over and show him your papers and all. How does he get through? Does he bypass them or something? What does he do?
No, he doesn't bypass them.
He goes in. I mean, all those things he carries, he has papers on them all or something? Has he?
I've never been with him when he's loaded. With horses.
I bet he just goes through the woods and gets around them. I'll bet you. Bet he knows where every one of them is.
I know where they all are in the water.
Mm-hmm.
They're right down the Suwannee River. If you don't cross the Suwannee, you don't need a checkpoint.
Oh, really?
I used to go back and forth between Alabama and Pensacola, and I never needed a paper on any horse that I had, because it was on the west side of the Suwannee, and I didn't have to cross it.
See, they got one up here.
Oh,
yeah. They got one down here at Ocala, just south of Ocala.
When did you get caught with Ajax?
At that one up here at
first one.
Yeah. Up towards Lake City. Not quite to Lake City yet. But, all I wanted was a, VE certificate.
They weren't
really too bad about it.
Because my horse is going to live here without any papers. Not on purpose.
I think that ban has been lifted now. Probably the VE quarantine thing.
Now, but you have to have the CIA.
You do?
Coggins.
Yeah. Well, how did they get through without it?
Explanation. And they took it. We got separated. I was supposed to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
And the people told him and I got separated.
Hmm.
And that was a wild tale.
Well, I think you can go around this one up here, probably, if you went over toward Jacksonville or something. Cross somewhere else. Come back in.
I'm sure Cookie knows his way.
I bet you that's what he does. Goes up 301, probably.
You tell him.
Yeah,
I'll
tell you.
He was coming over this afternoon and bring his buggy. And he had trouble with his head gasket.
So he's not going to come?
Yeah, I was hoping he'd get over here.
He was willing for us to come over there.
Well, what was he going to pull with it?
Hmm?
What was he going to use to pull it?
He got it over there for sale.
Yeah, well, wasn't he going to show it off and hook one of the horses up to it?
Yeah.
He got rowdy.
But over there, he didn't have anything to pull it with, does he?
No.
So if we went over there, we wouldn't get to see it pulled.
No, just a picture of it.
Mm-hmm.
Red velvet seat.
Yeah.
He's still the same place?
Mm-hmm. The cookie is rich in cases. In specific cases.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Didn't think much Ted Cannon when he discovered the light meter didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't care much about the camera. I mean, you know, it didn't affect his opinion of the camera one way or the other, but he said the price on it was way too high for if the light meter didn't work. And he shouldn't get more than $75 for it.
Oh, really?
What he said. Yeah. Uh-huh. If the light meter was broken, which it is, which obviously. the cameras depreciate a lot more than I think.
Mm-hmm.
Cameras depreciate a lot more than I realize they did.
I wouldn't want to think a camera depreciate at all.
Well, it depends on the camera.
Oh, is that
put
right?
It up and it'd be like a lump of gold.
Depends on the camera. Some are. Some are like that.
What would
Leica
depreciate on it?
Leicas appreciate. They get more valuable. The ones I have that were made in the 50s, 1950s, and sold on the market for $200 or something. Now, you bought one then, stick it on your shelf, you could sell it now for $300-$400 more. They appreciate if you take care of them. If you beat them up, they don't. But,
this Cannon said that, he said, last night I talked to him on the phone, he said, he had played the fool, he laid it down on the grass, and the sun was out, and it went through the lens and burnt it.
Hmm. Well, I know they'll do that. That's why you need to keep a cap on the lens.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use the lens. You can take it off the camera and use it to, you know, like you did with the magnifying glass to make a flame, you know.
Yeah.
You do that. You can also use one for a magnifying glass. Take it off, and if you want to read close, you can put it right down on a book and just read big print.
Yeah.
Like a magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Huh. But you need to always keep your cap on it.
Because you never know when the sun's going to hit it just right to throw a beam back.
Yes.
Because, you see, the lens is automatically made to focus on the film. In other words, manufactured so that all the pieces of glass are in there to make the image go exactly right onto the film. To the point is supposed to come right to the film. That's where the shutter is. So if sunlight comes in there, it's going to be focused exactly right on the shutter.
Yeah.
You're going to burn a hole right in it.
Take long.
You have to be careful taking pictures of the sun too. You can take pictures of the sun, but you got to do it quick before it gives us a chance to.
Oh,
really?
Oh, did it just burn right through, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. I've taken some pictures right of this, you know, just looking right at the sun, you know, with some background or something. But you got to do it fast. You can't sit there and be focusing and playing with it, or else something like that, you burn your eye because then you're looking through it. If you got a few lens
camera.
A lot of traps in the world.
Yeah. Now, what's the one that you just got, Nick?
The one I just got is an Icon
uh-huh.
Camera. It's their best one that they make. It's got a lot of fancy gizmos on it. Guy wouldn't like it. It's got too many buttons and knobs and things.
Well, you've got all of them. I wouldn't, because I just get, you know, I can't. I'm not mechanical enough. I have trouble with these things. I have to tape over the thing. Just leave one or two buttons.
Well, that's what you end up doing with the camera. You end up getting all your buttons set finally, and then you just use one or two after that.
Yeah.
Unless you want to do something special.
Yeah.
Then you got to mess them all up again.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
But now some cameras are like your basic tapes. You just have nothing but the bare necessity, just a couple of buttons, and that's it. They're just the ones you have to have, and that's all.
Yeah.
So those cameras are the best ones, too.
They would be the ones least likely to get out of things.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's another good thing about Leicas. They're really, really sturdy. You can drop them and not bust them if you're lucky. thing that comes to mind is I was talking to a fellow in a camera shop who had a Leica, just like the one I got. And he was in a plane doing research in the Antarctic, above Alaska, further north than that, almost to the pole. And they were flying this plane that landed on the ice somehow. And he'd get out and make a sample or something, and he had this camera, he'd take pictures. And they got back in the plane, took off, and the camera fell out the place where the wheels, the hole that the wheels come up into.
Mm-hmm.
It fell out the landing gear hole of the plane. After as they were taking off, they were 20 or 50 feet above the ground. As they were taking off, when it fell out, it fell down onto the ice, and he circled back around, landed, and went down and got it, and went on taking his pictures. Didn't bother a bit. And that was at 180 degrees below zero temperature. The camera still operated perfectly at that temperature. And that was really said something. They're really well, all handmade for one thing.
Yeah.
Everywhere one of them's handmade.
Yeah, I like them.
Yeah. And the another story I remember, I was talking to a fella in a camera shop who was trying to sell me his camera. It was a Leica. And he said, this Leica has the real distinct distinction about it, and that is, this camera was the one that took pictures during those Chicago riots, during the convention.
Yeah.
And not only that, but he was the photographer taking it, and he got mixed up in the riots and had to use the camera as a weapon to keep rioters away from him, from beating him up. So he turned it around and held it by the lens and used the body as a camera to beat people off.
Oh, man.
And it's got a little dent in the side of the camera that he says came from hitting somebody on the head with it. And still works perfectly. Didn't damage it a bit. And he was trying to sell that one to me. I didn't buy it, but he was telling me that.
Nobody buying you need to hit it.
But,
see, this thing here, that's just a lot of vinyl there.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I leave it on there, it's not as hard, it's not as easy to drop with that on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do drop it, it'll cushion it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything much that's particular, but those binoculars, I keep the leather strap on them, and generally I've got it around my wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I lost that. It didn't cost very much, but it still, I wouldn't have any if I lost them.
That's right.
But I never had anything as fragile as a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Working in the hand, holding the hand. I've got that telescope thing, but you see, that's on a stand, and I've never even dropped that.
Well, your tape machines are fragile too. Can't drop one of those. You're carrying them out around, you know, like we were doing sometimes. You had them strapped on your back. If one dropped, it would break.
Guys finally got two fine ones that will make copies. That was real exciting when he could.
Are they Sony's? Sony makes a good one.
Everything I have Sony, because that's the only help I've got.
So oh.
I have to, if he wasn't there, I'd have to.
Mm-hmm.
If I got another helper, I'd have to.
Dick Moss, you haven't seen him any. Huh?
What happened to Dick? He got those college boys in there in the repair department.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't stand that. They charged me a big price, and I couldn't even find out what they'd done.
That is right.
You mean they hadn't fixed it at all? When you take it?
Yeah, but when you take it in, you don't know what to fix.
Oh.
And you try to find out what they've done. And the boy's gone, and he's in class.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Find out. And the next time you see him, you don't recognize him.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't hang on very long.
Yeah. Is he still in business up there?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's apparently thriving.
I remember the last time I was in there, he had just traded a stereo for a saddle.
Yeah,
that great big saddle. he had given somebody one of his stereos and took that saddle in trade.
Yeah.
wasn't expected to use it.
And he said he never would use it much, but he just don't know why.
He divorced a girl he grew up with.
Yeah, I heard that.
And married this bright math girl. And he got a little girl in there about so big, and she is some companion.
Really? You still go in there every now and then to see him, huh?
Yeah. That's so. I don't do much anymore. All I do is sit here and talk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do much of that. I've done, mostly what I've done in the last 6 months is try to get a crew. And I run into all sorts of interesting things. Find out a lot, but I'm not any closer to it than I was.
And everybody wants a job. He has plenty of applications.
By the writing part of it, I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
One thing they want to write, but they want a job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, if they get a job, they'll have to do my writing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't pay them to do theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the old thing about the universities.
Mm-hmm.
You're middle aged before you realize that you haven't accomplished anything.
Mm-hmm.
You've just been on the point of doing it for all those years.
Well, these days everything's economics. You got they don't care about what they do and they want the money.
I don't know, Rick. I think a lot of it is just they're not enlightened. I don't see any ideas that are current. They've not even been exposed to them.
I don't think they even want to be. I don't think they care if they are or not these days. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Occasionally you'll find one, but he's going to make it anyway. Those kind. You'll run across one or two, but
I don't know. I wouldn't oversimplify it. I think they've got a lot to put up with. So much of it now is institutionalized.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can't get along without institutions, but sometimes you can't get along with them, and highly institutionalized, that's what I run into, and I don't know, there's no remedies, quick recipe for it. I thought, well, I would get into some of these young fellas, write for the Sun, the UF student journalist. Some every now and then you run across a feature story that seems rather promising. I thought, well, I'll get a couple of them to work with me for a while. Well, it was a fine idea. It didn't work. one thing. Well, I tell you learn so damn much. One thing, they are student journalists, they are writers, except they don't want to write. They write just as little as they can get by with. And furthermore, they do a form of writing, the stuff that comes over the wire, where it's nothing to it. It's not writing, it's just compiling, or putting a few words together.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, they're taught that all through school because they go through journalism school. They're taught to do that.
Sure.
I know, because I work at the paper there at UT. I'm in production there of the student publication, the student newspaper there. And I'm in charge of putting it together. In other words, deciding what goes where on the page and putting it down and getting it to the printers and all of that. But they come in there And of course, it's all run by the journalism department. And they send students in class down to write the stories, you know, and go do the work and be the reporter and all that. And you ought to see some of the stuff that comes in. You wouldn't believe. Just incredible.
Yeah, well, you got your confidence, but even the good ones are still not writers. I haven't run across any who I haven't run across them. Now there are some undoubtedly who can't write and not allergic to it. But I've got into a curious variation of this thing about being a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing.
And she said, well, the director of the academy had been to the United States and for a souvenir brought back a Western saddle. That's the only one she'd ever seen or heard about being around. And couldn't find any in France. Yet they love Westerns. They just love Westerns.
You mean Western movies?
Movies,
yeah.
And cowboys and shoot 'em up and rodeos. And boy,
yeah,
they just really crazy about it.
Uh-huh.
All France stops when Bonanza comes on.
Uh-huh.
Just comes to a halt. I was in a restaurant. And somewhere on the Riviera, Nice or Marseille, and came in and sat down, and they brought us the menu and waited. 20 minutes later, nobody came to take the order. Couldn't find a waiter anywhere, and so we didn't know whether to walk out or go looking for a waiter. And I got up and walked around and found all the waiters in a back room watching Bonanza on TV. And they have it dubbed in, you know, in French.
Yeah.
And I asked them, I said, "What? You know, we need to get waited on here." And I said, "Oh, wait till Bonanza's over." They wouldn't do a thing until Bonanza was over. And you ought to see the way that dubbed in, old Hoss Cartwright, in a little old voice like this. Funniest sounding thing you've ever heard. Really funny. But, boy, they love Westerns. Those ones with Clint Eastwood, a few dollars more for a fistful.
Oh, yeah.
Those played over and over and over.
Uh-huh.
They have subtitles in French, but it's in English.
Uh-huh.
So it's fun to go to them. You can hear, you know, what's going on. But
yeah.
I went to one in Shark. I went to a few dollars more, I think. And they just went crazy over. But nobody rides that way. I can't
nobody
remember.
Rides that way.
Yeah, same way in Italy. I went to the fairgrounds in Rome, the Villa Borghese there, where they have all the horse shows. Beautiful arena, nice. Nobody's ever heard of Western anything. Stadium jumping and all the nice English stuff, but I didn't look at England though.
That's a feel for you then, Nick. You can just
I'm thinking you can make money over there. If they're so crazy about Westerns.
Uh-huh.
You opened up a riding stable with Westerns?
Why sure.
Trail rides and maybe even put on a rodeo, something like that, or a Western show or something. I bet you can make money if they're so crazy about it.
Mm-hmm. Probably do pretty
good with
Wild West Show. Yeah. Yeah, well, have a shoot 'em up cowboy act or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. What you going to get at the range? Hat?
Yeah.
All the way for hat? It's funny, you know, I knew there was something that missing.
Yeah. Well, I always look around. If they have something, I might get something else. If they have something,
yeah.
I could use it.
But do you want?
Do
you want
to
call?
Is there?
Open for? I'm pretty sure that we'll leave until 8.
I think I remember seeing a sign tacked on their door.
I think I remember a 9 to 9 sign.
Uh-huh.
Seeing me, I've been there at night too.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure. Especially with Christmas, anyway.
Yeah. I know they aren't usually open that late every night, but.
No, that's what I was thinking. I didn't know whether they'd be open.
Well, even if they were just open at 8, we could make that too.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll excuse you if you need to
well,
go.
Well, better, I guess.
It sure was fun.
Yeah.
You come by.
I'll
we'll
look for you up at the...
We'll see you up in Tennessee.
Yeah, I'll...
And you...
I'll
call
when I get
in
and
call out the house.
Of course, Marie has my number. And if you need, if you want to get a hold of Larry, he's at the station.
Yeah, Larry Taylor.
Yeah.
Well, are you going to be coming back this way from the ranch or anyway, Nick, or is it
going to
be
anyway? No, not all the way. It's all right.
Well, you can check that Robert if he wants to sleep out better.
It's all
over there.
Yeah, it's all fixed up.
Okay.
Just like always, huh?
Yeah. Well, it has had papers all over the.
Yeah.
And I have misgivings, you see, about the professional training. It's institutionalized to a degree. You don't know whether it's worth a damn. It can't be just the reverse of what you want.
Mm-hmm.
What they do, and I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's as good, guys.
What they do. Now, you say they can't take a sustained bit of exposure of an interview, call it an interview. They do little ones.
Yeah.
And when they talk, a lot of times they're talking about their old times.
Mm-hmm.
And, turkey call, the old gentleman is making canned tomatoes in tough time. But you take that a little farther into the process, they'll make you a chair and show you a picture of every little step. And they do that better. The narrative that goes with it and the pictures are better than anything I've ever seen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 10 graders.
Mm-hmm.
I just try to 10th grader, 8th grader, 9th grader, 10th grader, 12th grader.
Yeah.
I just step back.
Yeah.
Well, I look what they do. They have to talk to people. The interview. Their interview is more interesting than the interview of the feature stories.
Yeah.
Those fellas that have those interviews, they come up with a whole lot of ridiculous stuff. Now, these eighth graders make contact with those people. For one thing, it's pretty well isolated. It's the mountain people. It's a homogeneous sort of culture that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So they are interested. They are actually interested in the culture, and in the student journalist not interested in what they're doing.
Right, that's true.
They don't know anything
mm-hmm.
about it before they go, and they never go back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And these people, these youngsters, go back again and again, and they write on the same people.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, the interview with them will be a kind of an inquiry
mm-hmm.
into the way of life. Well, they've got the tape, and they use it until they, student journalists can't use tape.
They don't even try.
They think it throws them off and things like that. They may get a little on tape, but they don't get much. Well, you see, they make the tape and they file the tapes and they go into the tapes and make up other stories out of them. They use a camera apparently all of them do these, use all these things. They use the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And they do the process shots on how to put the chair back together, or they get a interesting angle on somebody or something.
Mm-hmm.
They do the layout. They do it all themselves. Is what I saw the fellow up there, Wigginton, and he said they did it.
Hmm. I didn't know that.
They did it.
Hmm.
And now they got the typewriter. Well, now you it's not as common now to find these young people who can type with ease,
mm-hmm.
to where they can type and sing too. That for a while, you see, just about everybody could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now what you've got. I picked this up from Greensboro, Jack Long's colleague there. What's his name? Wilson?
Mm-hmm. Ben Wilson.
Ben, yes, Ben. I was over in the bookstore. I went over to get a toothbrush, and I just sort of shopping around. I got over to looking at the textbooks, and I got over to English, and I saw, just by chance, I saw this new journalism in an English course, Ben Wilson. When I got back over there, I said, well, you use a journalism book in English course. He told me. He said he was using that journalism because it was a. He's the first one I ever heard say this, because it was an approach. It was a tool by which his students could inquire into what went on outside of them.
Mm-hmm.
The interview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so eventually I kept knocking around with it, and what it goes into is, you see, you've got all those things there are mental. They're your mental things. Your typewriter and your camera and your tape and your interview, all of those mental equipment enables you to explore what goes on. And you can't do it without them. You say, well, longhand. Who's going to use longhand when you've got a typewriter? It's just like looking at the birds out there with your natural eye. You don't do that anymore. Once you've got a binoculars,
mm-hmm.
you just don't see enough.
That's right.
And furthermore, you don't look at them much with binoculars. You look at them through the camera. So, you see, I'm sort of right up amongst the front line. But you see, these fellas you work with don't know that.
Yeah, that's right.
They have no conception of that. Well, how are they going to get things straight? I mean, they'll never have an interview that's worth a hoot.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to the consultant over there, the man that they were. He got some dazzling notions. So it's against you, and you don't have the freedom. You see, you get into journalism and you do these things. And you get into creative writing and you do certain things. Well, why distinguish I mean, why can't a creative writer write journalism, journalism write creative writing?
Mm-hmm.
If they're writers.
Mm-hmm.
And a creative writer can't write about something that happened, he gotta make up something. Now, what great virtue of making up something is, I don't know. Except that they don't know what happens.
Yeah.
And no possible way of finding out. So you really, I mean, it's not simple. You see, look how much I've labored at it out here and kept the ball going, and look how little I've learned. And I don't have any of those restraints. Camera and your horse background. You see, that's that strikes me as being pretty old field. Well, you can do some pretty good work.
Yeah, it is.
If you had somebody go along and put a few words to it.
Go out of business. Well, after he died, his son had it for a while.
Yeah, and then we just don't have anything there now. It's just going by.
And then his son and the color fella, who was pretty good, you know, they had to go out of business. They couldn't make it. And they turned it over to this next man, and he put it on a cash basis, and you'd go down there and it wasn't car parked. He used to go in there with Faye and say to him, I bring that up, you see. He said, Build any, and he died with his books full. They're still full. So he went into the retail meat business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he'd sell it to me, retail. I mean wholesale. What did I say? Wholesale. He'd sell it to me wholesale, except I can't buy a whole carcass, you see.
Yeah. That's the minimum? You gotta buy a big chunk?
Well, with that
started here in the last.
You never took pictures when you were out here.
Yeah, but just very, very, you know, in little, one of those little things. Snapshot
variety?
Yeah.
Polaroid.
Yep, that's right. That's all I ever was till last year, till a year or two ago.
tape of that talk with you instead last night.
I lived that fast.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do it all over for you.
You had it before.
No.
This one?
Yeah.
Well, I remember it.
No, you don't.
Have you gotten it since 3 months?
Yeah.
Well, you had one there when I was here last. I was here 3 months ago.
But not that.
I know, but there was one here. What, did you get rid of the old one and get this one?
Oh, yeah, that little pan one.
That one
that... This looked like a hotel.
Where'd you run across that one?
Well, from an old stove man, kerosene man. One of the old-time practitioners.
Yeah.
J.R. Munton. J.R. said he had 1,000 calls. Asking him, would they please come fix that stove or clean that stove or fix it up for him. And he tells him that he had to get out of the business and he gave away all of his equipment. Because he can't get down on the floor anymore and get back up. Got a bad knee.
So you got this one from him, huh?
He came over here 3 times and spent about a couple hours each time putting that stove in.
Well, he does a job, all right.
Well, he does a job. You see, he took out those old pipes and put in those.
I noticed. He's got some different ones.
He's costly.
Mm-hmm. What's your spare TV there? Is that a Mammoth? Doesn't work? Is there that color one you had? You had one here for a while.
Just a very short while.
Didn't like those, huh?
It didn't work.
Oh.
And it didn't, it was hard on my eyes and black noise.
We thought it would be easy.
Trailer
guy?
Yeah, it's plenty.
Over in the old trailer and pick up a little bread.